From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Park City is teeming with Olympic athletes, past, present, and future. And every so often, we look into the stories that create Olympians, what makes them tick, how they achieve their successes, and what they do when they retire. At such young ages, there's a lot of options. Today, we welcome Ben Barron, a Park City resident who retired from the National Nordic Combined Team after the 2018 Winter Olympics. Ben is making his life here in Park City with a new role in the Nordic ski world. Now, if you don't really understand Nordic Combined, that's okay. We're all still struggling to understand this insanity. Stay tuned to hear more about what makes our guest passionate about it. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Thanks for joining and taking a moment off the slopes. You said you started skiing Nordic Combined at age 7, and for many of us, that seems wild and crazy to be jumping off 100-foot, 200-foot, 300-foot jumps. How did all this start for you?
I think just growing up, like at least the way I remember it was when I was that age, that was the cool sport to do, so like all my friends did it. So I kind of just followed them into that. And also, like, I could see the ski jumps from my house. So I think even before then, like, I had my sights on that. And I said, I want to go off those jumps. And then once I started, it's just, I don't know, it's like the best after-school program in the world. Like, just go hucking yourself off jumps. So, yeah, it was, like, perfect for me.
And you had an icon, Michael Jordan, that you looked up to. And I know he's quite old now, but a local resident here that...
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of really awesome role models growing up with Bill DeMong, who's actually now my boss. So it's kind of funny how full circle that's come. Yeah, I have a lot of funny stories just about Bill. And yeah, it's cool that I get to now learn under him in a different role. But yeah, definitely like seeing those guys, their success in the world champs and Olympics and stuff as I was growing up was... That was what kept me in it. Like, that's what kept me... I wanted to do that, for sure.
And I'm not sure if Billy was on the cereal box, but at least a poster when you were a kid of Billy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I had posters of Billy in my room, like, past the age it was, like, cool. I think...
It's still cool to have posters.
Well, so... in your room. I think I was, like, 19, 20, so it was a couple years ago, and I had just moved to Park City recently, and... Bill came over to our house that we were living in here to grab something, and I was like in my room working on some homework or something, and Bill like opened the door to say hi, and there was a poster of him in my room. You know, I'm 20 years old. And we kind of looked at each other, and immediately after he left, I took it down. I was like, okay, this is weird now. Like,
that's great. And for those of our listeners who don't know Billy DeMong's legacy, he won gold in the Vancouver Olympics, yeah. Right? Which was 2010
mm-hmm.
or
2010.
Yeah. And he, of course, lives in Park City, is raising a family here, and he's your boss.
Yeah.
You're working now with USA Nordic.
Yeah.
Okay, based here in Park City.
Based here in Park City. So we're the national leadership organization for ski jumping and Nordic Combined, men's and women's. And yeah, we're right in Kimball Junction, our office. And yeah, it's a great organization.
So when you say you grew up and you could see the ski jumps from your house, this was in Steamboat
yeah.
Springs. And it seems to me, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, that any Nordic Combined athlete, or most Nordic Combined athletes, and even ski jumpers in general, Nordic ski jumpers, they've either grown up in Steamboat Springs, Park City, or Lake Placid. I mean, are those the three sort of epicenters of
Those are of definitely Nordic? Those are the three biggest facilities. But if you look at our ski jumping team from 2018, I think three out of our four team members were from Chicago, Illinois.
Wow.
So
where do they jump there?
So there's the Norgi Ski Club right outside of Chicago. So there's like tons of small clubs scattered throughout the Midwest that produce great ski jumpers. But yeah, I think that that's part of our goal at USA Nordic is to have more places where athletes can come from or athletes can enjoy the sport. And so you're seeing that with, like, now that we have Anchorage, Alaska, we're turning athletes out of there and all over the Midwest and more than just Lake Placid and the East Coast. So that's the goal. But yeah, you're right. Those are the three big facilities.
Yeah. And yeah, the point is made, well made, that you don't need a lot of vertical to, you know, have a ski jump. And of course, no vertical, preferably no vertical on the Nordic track.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I have no clue.
You will soon have a clue. You're going to start Nordic skiing.
Are you getting pushed into Nordic?
I am, and we'll see in our next interview how much I get pushed into the Nordic. So
yeah, if you you want to be a Nordic Betty, perhaps.
Oh yeah, you could be a Betty.
I would totally be a Betty. So for you, you know what? What was the experience like being in the Olympics? And you were in 2018. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that before we kind of talk again more career stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty wild, especially because like a couple weeks before, maybe a month before the games, I was kind of on the outside looking in. I kind of going into it thought I was a lock to make the team, but then I just had a bad season and I was struggling and I was like, oh no, like I was watching this goal of mine just kind of slowly slipping away. And then like in the last minute I qualified and I remember Bill DeMong actually telling me in this hotel room, I was actually in the lobby of the hotel room, like bumming out. I was like pretty sure I wasn't going to the Olympics and this is like my lifetime goal. So I'm like kind of trying to come to terms with like, what do I do now? Like, how do I move forward from like this kind of failure? And then so Bill calls us up for a team meeting and it's the whole team that's already named to the games and me. And I was like, oh, like, do I have to go? Like, do I have to sit in on this meeting? And he's like, yeah, you've got to come. And so I'm sitting in the back of the room and Bill is like, oh, and I have one announcement. We have one more Olympic team member, Ben Barron. And he like throws me a bib. And I was like in the corner, like not really even listening. And I was thought he was messing with me. I was like, what? And so that was like how I found out. It was like this wow. Super, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And so then, yeah, it was a dream come true. It was super cool.
Did you put your poster of Bill back up then?
I immediately, yeah, I pulled it out of my suitcase and I taped it right back up. Exactly. Yeah, the games are wild. It's like 3 weeks we were there and it's just a total, I don't know, there's nothing else like it. It's just surrounded by all these incredible athletes and it's seeing all the culture. That was the really cool part for me. It was just the culture. I love the country. I love South Korea and getting to experience that. And we had some time after we competed as well to like go see the country more, which was one of my really favorite parts. And of course competing, like putting the bib on was a pretty wild thing. It's pretty weird just because like there weren't a lot of spectators there. And so I remember like the day I was told I was going to compete and I was so nervous and I was like trying not to be, which just makes it worse, by the way. And then, so I got to the venue and I looked around and I was like, these are all the same people I've competed against for the last 5 years. And I looked into the stands and there's like, my parents are probably down there, but like, there's probably, I don't know, 100 other people. It's like small. And I was like, okay, wow. Like this doesn't feel like a big deal, you know? So that like helped me actually a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of tone the stress down. But
you didn't think like millions, hundreds of millions of people are watching me around
the
world.
Hard to, and I like knew that, but it's hard to like get that into your head when you look around and there's really no one around. So it was kind of good. It helped me tune it out a bit. Yeah.
And you've retired at a pretty young age. And for a lot of people like myself, I'm still living in the past and reminiscing about my old fast days and trying to relive those every moment I can. How did you come to this point of retiring and going back to school and starting a career? What was that transition? What was that click moment for you?
Yeah, I think after the games, I just took a moment and kind of realized I'd been so focused on that goal for so many years. I was ready for something like a new challenge or something different. I definitely felt like I had gotten everything I could out of the sport, at least from an athlete perspective. So I call it the art of knowing when to quit. And so it just made sense. And then I like stumbled into an opportunity to go ski for the University of New Mexico because I had no idea what I was going to do. I had been taking online classes. So I was like, okay, well, I can finish my degree online. My girlfriend went to school at New Mexico and was on the ski team. And I was just down visiting. And her coach was like, hey, you should be on this team. And I hadn't even thought about it. Like, it wasn't even, I was like, that's a great idea. So I went to go do that, and so that was good because I kind of got to still keep being an athlete, but on a very different scale. And I got to go to school, which is something I never thought I'd get to do, like actually physically go to school, to college, which was really fun. And then Bill gave me the opportunity to just come back and right back into the organization with a marketing role, and I've just been learning under him, and it's been awesome. So I've been back here full time since June, and it's just great getting to live in Park City too. I really wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Neither would we. And it should be noted, you went to University of New Mexico, or was it New Mexico?
Yeah.
To chase your dreams of getting your degree and chase
my girlfriend. Yeah.
Who is?
Brenna Egan.
A local.
Local.
And if you don't know her, she's a staple in the community, been here for years, and the family is amazing. So,
yeah.
So it's interesting. There's another Nordic combine athlete that did sort of the same thing where you go to university, but there's not a Nordic combine team. There's just Nordic. And this will segue into this crazy sport where you do jumping and then the most physically demanding sport in the world, I think, cross-country skiing. And that other person is Nick Henriksen.
Yep.
He did that at University of Utah, I believe, after his Nordic combined career ended. So you're on the team, you're just doing cross-country. As Nordic combined, maybe you can just take us through a little bit what you do, and then does it end up being classic or skate or both or...
Yeah, so it's ski jumping and skate skiing. We just skate ski. We don't classic ski. Some Nordic combined skiers do it for fun. I never did it. I never learned how to classic ski. I had to learn last year. It's a super weird sport just because ski jumping, if you look at ski jumpers, they're skinny. They're small, and they are really explosive, fast twitch athletes. And you look at Nordic skiers, and they're super big, strong, slower twitch, endurance athletes. So they're almost like two polar opposite people. I mean, if you put a ski jumper and a cross-country skier side by side, you know the difference. It's very obvious. And then you have Nordic combined skiers who have to do both. So it's a super weird mixture. And it's kind of nice because it balances two very different sports, like a very physically demanding sport and more of like a mental... we always compared ski jumping to golf. Like it's super mental, and very technical. So it's a really weird combination. I don't know who decided. Some Norwegian decided to put them together. I think the thought was to figure out who the best all around skier was, and then it's just been in the game since the first games. It is a super odd sport. Looking back on it, like. Just when I was a Nordic skier, I was like, man, this is sweet. Like, Nordic combine is the hardest. It's so hard to train for because when you jump, you get worse at skiing. And when you ski, you get worse at jumping. So it's a really odd, hard sport.
Wow. That's crazy. And so how do the best Nordic combined skiers compare in cross-country skiing, skate skiing, to the best skate skiers in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, if your body types essentially are different, you've been training some of the same muscles, but not all of them, and then you've been splitting your time between ski jumping and cross-country. Yeah.
I would say, like, the best Nordic combined skiers are probably, like, close to top 40, top 50 in the world for cross-country, and then probably, like, top 30 in the world for jumping. So they're like, they could be on the World Cup, but but they wouldn't be, they'd be, if they specialize like, yeah, like fighting for 30th place or something like that, in either or. That's about what I would say, yeah.
You talk about the mental, and I've heard Billy mention the mental element of jumping. I'm going to talk about work world. You see these commercials that with enterprise and hiring, you know, athletes. With your mental and physical training, what makes an Olympian the best employee? What makes it that transition into the work world effective?
I think it's just like, at least for me, like from an early age, I learned how to like, how to schedule and work hard. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just an Olympian has a, probably a pretty hard work ethic. And I think that translates to anything. It doesn't just translate to sport. And I also think like the competitiveness translates to anything too. So it's just kind of this like this need to like excel at something. And so when sport gets taken away, it's like, okay, well, just find something to replace that with. And the work world is a great place to do that.
Do you find yourself setting a lot of goals and creatively reaching those or just pushing through no matter what to obtain them? What's the...
Yeah, I think goal setting's pretty big for me still, surprisingly. And also, what's I think the biggest thing that's helped me is just the scheduling from like time management as an athlete. Going into the work world has helped me so much. Like, I feel like that's something I really excel at just from my background in sport. And yeah.
The art of knowing when to quit. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I mean, what are those key indicators? Because as Pete mentioned, you know, a lot of us live on our former glories. You know, whether it's whether we're amateur athletes or professional or, you know, or something else in our lives
or we're
that
at work
is our passion.
We have a goal and we're not going to stop until we keep reaching it, you know, whatever that might be.
I think for me, it was like my enjoyment out of it, because I think it's one thing to, I think for me, it was just knowing that there were other things I was interested in and also looking at what I was doing and seeing like how much really more could I get out of it. And personally, I saw myself like I could have skied for another 8 years, but I probably wasn't going to get a whole lot better. And I was going to do the same thing I'd been doing for another 8 years. Cause it is, you know, you go to the same venues and do the same competitions. And so I kind of just saw it as like, you know what, I could do this for another 8 years and maybe get a little bit better, but I still wouldn't reach my goal. Like I wouldn't win an Olympic gold medal if I did this for another 8 years. I might get, you know, I might be in the top 20 or the top 15, but to me it was way more worthwhile to go spend 8 years doing something totally different. And yeah, I don't know. And same with when I went to school, like that was a super big adjustment. And then I just kind of started like saying yes to things that like opportunities that maybe didn't even sound like super cool to me at first, but just gave them a chance. And then all of a sudden I was like in a totally different space doing different things. And it was really interesting. So I think it's just each their own. But I think just thinking and just like taking a moment to think like, is whatever you're doing, like, is this something that I'm really still passionate about? And like, how much more am I going to get out of this? Because there's so much other stuff out there. Like, it's crazy still, even I think about all the other stuff out there. So it's like, you don't want to bottleneck yourself in one thing that you've, you know, basically gotten to the top of just because.
You were telling us before about how, was it just last week, you went and rode the White Rim Trail in a day, which most people do in 3 or 4 days. You did it in 8 hours and 40 minutes or something like that, which is very fast. And, you know, that's the kind of experience you probably, would you have done something like that while training? I mean,
no.
it's training in and of itself, but
it's not training. I can tell you that much. Like the whole, especially afterwards, I was thinking, I was like, that definitely did more harm on my body than good. And no, I totally wouldn't have done something like that. And so it's kind of been fun just a lot of like side things I've always wanted to do, but maybe like just time got in the way or training or stuff like that. And so now I've been trying to like knock some things off my list. And that is one thing. The White Remnant Day is something I've always wanted to do.
So give us two or three more of those kind of side adventures that you have on your little bucket list for the next year or so.
Ooh, that's a good question. Next year or so. Let's see. I really want to, well, one thing that I always want to do is I want to spend more time in the backcountry skiing, because that's something I didn't get to do as an athlete, and then also on the river. So next summer, get on some river trips. And then somewhere I'd always wanted to see was Glacier National Park, which I got to go see this summer. So just like little things like that where I just maybe didn't have the time or flexibility to go do that. And yeah, just knocking those little things off the list. But now after the White Rim, I'm like trying to think more like endurance-based things because I kind of like that. I need to find some more big rides to go do.
That's great.
Yeah.
There's lots of opportunities.
Yeah.
You could even try to ride every single trail here in Park City in 1 year.
Yeah, yeah, so
that
actually
is a big challenge.
It is.
Our landlord's son is gonna do that on a unicycle.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
All the single track in Park City, but not in a year, but he's in fifth grade.
Oh, I love it.
So yeah.
Yeah, I'm visualizing a 27-year-old kid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in fifth grade. He's going to ride all the single track in Park City on a unicycle. So it's like, I can't, like, it's hard to be like, oh, I'm going to do that on a mountain bike. It just doesn't sound cool anymore. Like,
yeah, that's so great. Hey, before we let you go, can you give us a preview of what the Nordic Combined and Nordic and ski jumping, right? Ski jumping, mm-hmm. too, is under USA mm-hmm. Nordic. You know, just give us an overview of what the teams are looking like, what your first events are, how Park City residents can participate in either helping fund these athletes or to go spectate and see some of these great sports.
Yeah. So the big thing right now is we have our Continental Cup coming up in Park City December 13th through 15th. So everyone should get that down in their calendars. We're putting a big emphasis on like the spectator experience this year. So Saturday night, December 14th, up at the ski jumps, it's an international Nordic Combined competition, men's and women's. We have the best women's Nordic Combined skier in the world right now, Tara Garrity Moats. And so she'll be competing. And we have a super strong men's team, and we're going to have food trucks and live music. And we have two local Park City bands making their debut live. And we're working on our permitting now. We're going to have beer and wine and spirits, and it's going to be a blast. So you can buy tickets at the gate, actually, that night, or follow our social media, USA Nordic, and we'll be blasting out ways to buy tickets. We'll be putting the link out. And, yeah, it's going to be an awesome event. I'm really excited about it. So I'm hoping to get as much of the community up there as we can because our athletes need a home field advantage.
That's right. Yeah. Ben Behrend, former Olympian and all-around Park City great guy. It's really wonderful that you're in our town here and choosing to make it home.
I love it here. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.